Now, when we come to chapter 9, we're coming here to a new section. In chapters 9 and 10, Israel now turns to land productivity. That is, prosperity is what they are trying to produce. In other words, they are trying to increase the value of the dollar, and they are attempting to increase production from the land. And they are nothing in the world but a backsliding heifer, God says. Now, in chapter 9, we have here prosperity had really blinded them. God had blessed them, and that had blinded them. And now there's coming upon them his judgment of famine. He says, "Rejoice not, O Israel, for joy like other peoples, for thou hast played the harlot from thy God, thou hast loved a reward upon every threshing floor." You're trying to increase your production, and that has become a judgment upon you. We're seeing today that big business and these great big combines, great corporations today, are not the blessing that we thought at one time they would be. And even farming is in that area. And the important thing is the stock market today. It certainly is more important than the scriptures to this nation. And that was happening in Israel. And they were being blessed. That is, there was a false prosperity in the land. And by the way, they're having that same prosperity over there today. But they're far from God even today. I believe that one of the methods that God had of judging us, you remember after World War II, I predicted that we were going to suffer as the other nations had. We had totally escaped. We did not have any bombing as England had, or certainly not as Germany had and France had, and as Japan had. We had totally escaped it all. And I felt, in fact, I preached at that time, I felt God would judge us. And we became at that time the most prosperous nation in the world, the leading nation in the world. And it looked like a contradiction of the statement I was making. It was called to my attention. And I wondered about it. And it took me, I think, 10 years after the war to see what God was doing. And I think now you can see it clearly. And it's this: God judged us with prosperity. That's what he did Israel. He said, "I provided everything for you. And you're giving credit to your own ingenuity, your own ability, and you're a proud people, and you're not looking to me or giving God credit at all." And my friend, that just happened to be a picture of us after the war. So we have that here as a picture before us. Now, verse 2, "The floor and the wine press shall not feed them, and the new wine shall fail in it." In other words, there's going to be a scarcity rather than abundance. And then we have something else here. God makes it clear they are going to get out of the land. He says in verse 3, "They shall not dwell in the Lord's land." God says, "I'm putting you out of my land." Although God said he'd not forget his covenant with Abraham and with Moses and with David, but their tenure in the land always depended on their obedience to God. And now he's going to put them out of the land. And then he said that they shall not dwell in the Lord's land, but Ephraim shall return to Egypt, and they shall eat unclean things in Assyria. In other words, they've been turning from God, breaking the law. Now God says, "I'm really going to give you a diet of unclean things." And so they're not going to have any more fun. They were sinning more, but enjoying it less. And I'm of the opinion that that's true today with a great many people. A man that talked to me when I was in a meeting, I don't want to even identify the place, it's back east, however. He came to me and he said, "The reason I came tonight, Dr. McGee," he said, "I've tried everything in this world." And he said, "I am so sick of sin, just sick of it." You see, sinning more, enjoying it less. And that's what brought that man to Christ, by the way. Just that very thing like that. Now, God says, "They shall not offer wine offerings to the Lord, neither shall they be pleasing unto him. Their sacrifices shall be unto them like the bread of mourner. All that eat of it shall be polluted, for their bread, for their soul, shall not come into the house of the Lord. You see, God judging them in this particular area here. Verse 5, what will ye do in the solemn day, for in the day of the feast of the Lord? For lo, they're gone because of destruction. Egypt shall gather them up. Memphis shall bury them. The pleasant places for their silver. Nettles shall possess them. Thorns shall be in their tabernacles. And many of them went down to the land of Egypt, actually after the captivity. But again, out of the land they could not worship God as God intended them to. Now, let me read verse 7 here in your hearing. The days of judgment are come. The days of recompense are come. Israel shall know it. The prophet is a fool. The spiritual man is mad for the multitude of thine iniquity and the great hatred. Now, what has happened here? The nation had actually lost its way spiritually. Why? Because of the leadership. Now, may I make a statement? I can remember that when I started out studying for the ministry, the big fight in this country, in the church, was between what was known as fundamentalism and modernism. And modernism espoused the social gospel. They were the do-gooders, and they claimed they had a high ethical standard. And I was inclined, frankly, to agree with them on their high ethical standard, because I found out a great many of the fundamentalists just don't operate on high ethics, and that is still true today. And I felt like maybe the liberal had one strike on us in that connection, and it disturbed me a great deal. But I began again to watch liberalism. And I didn't say this. Hosea said it. You can blame it on him. He says the prophet is a fool. Did they have really a high ethical standard? Well, follow them through. And I'm going to refer back now to the Watergate case. A young man who had gone to Yale, I guess it was, and he had an outstanding liberal preacher there. His father was an outstanding liberal. And he taught them ethics. Now, listen to this. This man also taught young men to burn their draft cards. That's against the law. He also taught certain protest meetings and even to the burning, and that there was a higher law than the law of the land, and he espoused that. Well, it led a young man into very serious trouble. That was in his class. He said, well, if that's ethics, then I can follow them. And I just merely use that as an illustration. I'm saying that's true all the way across this land. Liberalism has even lost its moral standard today. And I was in Portland when they discovered there a police woman testified that the place where they were getting dope was that run by the liberal churches. And across this land today, liberalism, I didn't say it. Hosea said the prophet's a fool. He's led the nation astray. And liberalism is responsible for the policy that we followed after World War II. And the trouble that we're in today is a trouble that's been produced by liberalism. I'll guarantee you this. Fundamentalism may act fanatic at times. But the fact of the matter is, fundamentalism did not lead to the trouble that we're in today. And then, even before I began studying for the ministry, I was in college and had not yet gone to seminary. I listened to certain men like Dr. Ironside, Dr. Harry Rimmer, Dr. Arthur Brown, and I heard my professors and liberal preachers call them fanatics. Do you know the things that they preached about and said then are as true today as it possibly can be, and the things I was taught in school, that doesn't happen to be true today. It just didn't work out that way. They had turned their back on God, And the judgment was coming because of that. And they had no spiritual discernment today. And the thing that disturbs me about our nation, we're receiving letters now from many people, and we're rejoicing in it. They're coming out of cults and isms. Well, how did they get trapped in all of these things today? Only one explanation, that's ignorance of the Word of God, lack of spiritual discernment. Now, God says He intends to judge them for that. And this is the pattern, this is an illustration for any nation that's made a pretense of being a Christian nation. Now he says the watchman of Ephraim was with my God, but the prophet is a snare of a fowler in all the ways, and hatred in the house of his God. The watchman, evidently there were a few fanatical fundamentalists around in that day warning the people. And yet he says that the prophet is the snare of a fowler. And that's harsh language. I would never use that kind of language to speak of the liberal today, and yet I believe that liberalism is in control of the news media. You couldn't get a fundamental message on the television today or on the radio. Liberalism just won't have it. They turn it down. And yet they have a sacred cow known as the freedom of the press, freedom of speech. Well, fundamentalists have very little freedom today, I can assure you that. But I do want to say that liberalism, whether it's in politics, whether it's in the news media, or whether it's in the pulpit, is a snare. It's like a trap that is set, and it brainwashes people today. And as a result, friends, we've been in trouble ever since World War II. In fact, before World War II, this nation began to move into trouble. And we've had nothing but trouble ever since. And it's time somebody is making a diagnosis and give a prognosis of the case. The problem is we've turned from God as a nation as a whole. That is the condition today. And God has become a big swear word in Washington, probably used more than any other, but only used in the form of blasphemy, never in the form of prayer or of worship of Him. Now, let's move along here in this. He says, verse 9, they have deeply corrupted themselves, as in the days of Gibeah. Therefore, He will remember their iniquity. He will judge their sins. Now, there's no ifs, ands, buts about it. God intends to judge sin. Now, maybe you don't like it, but that's exactly what He says, that He intends to judge sin. Now, He says here in verse 10, and let me begin reading at verse 10. He says something else is going to happen to you. He says, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first ripe in the fig tree. Now, the vine and the fig tree are symbols of the nation Israel. And that's well established all the way through the Word of God. And Hosea just comes right out and says it. I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first ripe in the fig tree, her first time. But they went to Baal Peor and separated themselves under that shame, and their abominations were according as they loved. Now, they not only established calf worship in both Samaria and Bethel, but they also brought in the prophets of Baal under Ahab and Jezebel. Now, will you notice, God makes it very clear, verse 11, as for Ephraim, their glory shall fly away like a bird. It's like a bird that takes off. You've ever been duck hunting, and you spend the cold hours of the morning in a duck trap or in a boat out on a lake, and then right before the sun comes up and you could start shooting, some monkey that's out there hunting, he fires a gun, and every duck on the lake or nearby takes off, and you watch them fly away. Well, that was the glory of Ephraim. It was departing. This nation had made a tremendous impact upon the ancient world, but that glory was flying away like a bird from the birth and from the womb and from the conception. Though they bring up their children, yet will I bereave them, that there shall not be a man left, yea, woe also to them when I depart from them. God says, I intend to judge them, and one of the judgments was this. You see, the thing promised Abraham was not only to give him a land, but I'm going to multiply your seed. They'll be like the sand on the seashore, and then God says they'll be like the stars in heaven later on. And God made that good. But now they've sinned. God says you're going to have really a decline in your birth rate. And that'll be part of my judgment upon you. And you won't have to resort to that which is actually murder. You will not have to resort to abortion. That is when it's done just to escape or make sin possible, and as it's used today. Now, God says in verse 13 here, Ephraim, as I saw Tyre, is planted as a pleasant place, but Ephraim shall bring forth its children to the murderer. Now, God at this time had not judged Tyre. Tyre was a great commercial center, and the northern kingdom, it had caught on. It was like a fever, and they became a commercial center also, and they were going in for that. There was a false prosperity, by the way, and that was deceiving them. Now God says, verse 14, give them, O Lord, what wilt thou give? Give them a miscarrying womb and dry breasts. The women will be barren. And they went through that period at the time. The judgment of God upon them. Verse 15, all their wickedness is in Gilgal, for there I hated them. For the wickedness of their doings I will drive them out of mine house. I will love them no more. All their princes are revolters. Now God says, their sin in Gilgal brought my judgment down upon them. It should be a warning to you, though I love them. Now he says, I'll judge you again, and you'll come to the conclusion I don't love you anymore either. Verse 16, Ephraim is smitten. Their root is dried up. They shall bear no fruit. Yea, though they bring forth, yet will I slay even the beloved fruit of their womb. Not only the fruit from the ground, but the birth of children. Verse 17, my God will cast them away because they did not hearken unto him, and they shall be wanderers among the nations. Now, someone has said the thing that has characterized the Jew has been the wandering Jew and Shylock in Shakespeare. Now, I disagree totally with both of them. But the thing is, God says they're going to be wanderers among the nation. He'd cast them out. Now, the 10 tribes as such did not return. They came back with Judah, it's true. And there was that mixture, and they spread throughout the land. You find them around Galilee. In fact, that's where Mary and Joseph lived. And they were actually members of the tribe of Judah, but they were way up there. So there was a tremendous scattering in the land, even when they returned at the Babylonian captivity, and the 10 tribes came with them. After all, when Babylon destroyed Assyria, they took the 10 tribes with them, and they were amalgamated, intermixed with the others, and they came back to the land so that today the average Jew could not tell you what tribe he belongs to. Yet God says he'll know it someday.